The third year. Severus was halfway through his second cup of coffee, debating whether to put the warm August morning to good use by foraging for ingredients in the forest or indulge his desire to stay down in the dungeons with a book, as he had done for most of July, when the knock on his door came. His high spirits instantly took a nosedive. They fell further when he laid eyes on lilac robes cut through with disgustingly cheerful swirls of golden thread.
"If you're here to cajole me into taking breakfast in the Great Hall for the remainder of the summer, you're wasting your time."
"And good morning to you too, Severus," Dumbledore said. When Severus simply held his gaze through the sliver of open door in return, he sighed. "It was not my intention to discourage you from your self-imposed isolation, no. Although I dare say I've missed our theoretical discussions over kippers and bacon. There's so little time for them during the school year." Severus's eyes narrowed.
"Well then,"
he said, enunciating each word as clearly as if he was speaking to a particularly dim-witted first year,
"perhaps you ought not to have appointed a slavering beast to the defense post."
"Really now?"
"One which attempted to kill me, in case you've conveniently forgotten this inconsequential fact."
"I haven't forgotten anything, but I do so wish you could let go of this grudge you hold against Remus. You will be colleagues in less than a month, and have to cooperate as such. Why not at least give him a chance, for your benefit as well as his?"
"No, no," Dumbledore raised a hand, as if to ward off the words which flew from Severus's lips.
"Don't answer that. I have no wish to rehash our last conversation. That is not why I came. We have a much bigger problem on our hands. I take it your absence at breakfast means you haven't seen this?"
"Potter," was Severus's first thought.
He grabbed the Daily Prophet Dumbledore was holding up in the next instant. The flashing headline, "Boy Who Lived Murdered by Escaped Convict," confirmed his worst fears. The unfolding tale, as narrated by eyewitness on the scene Stan Shunpike, revealed more incoherence than fact, however.
"Threw him right in front of the bus, didn't he, Ern?" he was quoted in the article. "Under he went, crunch, and it were only when I stepped out to help, 'cause poor Ern was all in shock, that I saw him. Serious black. Never seen nothing like it, I didn't. Sat on the curb with that mad gleam in his eye, staring at the poor boy's neck under the wheels. Laughing, he was, so I stepped back and tripped on the steps, and he jumped to his feet and stared at me. Thought me last hour was struck, but he just stared, and then he ran off."
Severus was doing a fair bit of staring himself, trying to wring any pertinent detail from the overly embellished prose of the rest of the article, to no avail.
"That doesn't make any sense," he said. "Why would Black murder Potter by throwing him under the night bus, when he could have killed him in any number of different ways without any witnesses?"
"Curious, isn't it?" Dumbledore said. "I cannot make head or tail of it either. Of course, logic does not necessarily apply to the motivations of madmen."
"And what was Potter doing outside the wards of the house?"
"That I can answer," Dumbledore said. "An alert for underage use of magic in Little Whinging was raised with the Ministry last night. It appears that Harry blew up his aunt to the size of a balloon, which must have prompted his running away. Unfortunately, Mrs. Fig had already retired to bed, as it was late in the evening." The paper crumpled inside Severus's fist. "And, as you can see from the article, the actual incident took place in Magnolia Crescent, too far away for her to have heard the commotion. I checked in with her and the orrery this morning, but the report in the paper was the first I heard of this."
"And now you want me to fix the mess resulting from everyone else's incompetence?"
"Naturally." "I would not have thought you'd object to the chance to be the one to capture Black," Dumbledore said, managing to sound both coaxing and disapproving. Not for the first time, Severus reflected that the Sorting Hat had made a grave error by not placing the headmaster in Slytherin. Reluctantly, he inclined his head. He despised being manipulated, even more so when he was aware of it happening every step of the way.
"No," Dumbledore said.
as we regrettably lack some key facts, due to Stan Shunpike hardly being what I would call a reliable witness, there are multiple ways Harry's encounter with Black could have come to pass. If Harry had already called the night bus, and Black acted opportunistically, I suggest you focus on preventing Black from doing so, and capturing him. Let Harry drive off, and if he remains none the wiser, all the better for it.
Do you believe that's a good idea?
The Ministry will soon catch up with him, Dumbledore said. And Harry must have had a reason for leaving the Dursleys. He's never run away before. I would rather not antagonize the boy further, just in the event that you are unsuccessful at imprisoning Black.
Severus scowled. The faith you place in my abilities is astounding.
Of course, Dumbledore continued unfazed, the other option is that Harry called the night bus accidentally, whilst he was already struggling with Black. Obviously, in that event, you will have to ensure he be brought to a place of safety. It will raise uncomfortable questions, as, indeed, will you finding Black in the first place, but there is no way around it.
I'm sorry, Severus said, not feeling sorry at all. But judging by those options, either I'm incapable of capturing Black, or I'm capable of managing both him and Potter at the same time. Which is it?
Dumbledore frowned at him over the rim of his spectacles. I have no wish to fight with you, my boy. I trust I've made our objectives quite clear. Harry's life must take precedence at all times.
Of course, Severus said, sketching an exaggerated bow in the air between them. One knight in black armor coming right up. And he slammed the door to his quarters in Dumbledore's face. Truth be told, once he'd shoved his resentment at being played like a well-tuned instrument firmly aside, Severus rather looked forward to this particular instance of Potter resurrection. No, that was too mild a phrase by far, not nearly sufficient to describe how his very being thrilled at the task, to know in advance where Black would be, to be the one to put him to justice. It changed everything. He'd hardly been in a fit state to delight in Black's imprisonment when he was sent off 12 years ago, caught in a grief-soaked, guilty rage which made Azkaban seem like just another twisted joke for Black to throw in his face. A lifetime amidst the Dementors had been too lenient a sentence. Avada Kedavra would have been too lenient. The rankness of Black's betrayal demanded he suffer before he died. Severus knew all about suffering. Capture Black might have been Dumbledore's order, but what if, in the process, Severus's wand hand just so happened to slip into patterns of spells he'd not used in over a decade, yet still knew in his dreams? Black was vicious, and self-defense, just for once, lay on Severus's side. Capture Black, Dumbledore said, but the posters said dead or alive, so if Severus accidentally cut him to ribbons in the process, what of it? No one important would care. And the looming specter of Lupin on Severus's horizon instantly morphed into a delight of its own, the chance to repay a lifetime's worth of torture by continuous references to Black, Lupin's failure to stop him, and Severus's ultimate success. He was already mentally composing remarks which would flow casually into everyday conversation, yet cut to the quick, when he arrived in Little Whinging. In hindsight, that was his first mistake. It must have been, because later he could not account for how his detection spell could have failed to pinpoint Black's location or arrival. Crafted by himself many moons ago, it reacted to the presence of certain constituents of all human blood within a limited radius. Unlike Hominem Revelio, it did not unmask disguises, but gave a target to aim for with incredible sensitivity. Thus far, it had not failed him once, and it certainly lit up the muggles inside their houses like fairy lights on a Christmas tree. It also lit up Potter the instant he came within range, and, safely disillusioned amidst two giant rhododendrons, Severus simply assumed the spell's infallibility and waited. That was his second mistake. He should have burst from his hideout the minute Potter cast Lumos and glanced over his shoulder, because something about that struck him as off. But there was nothing there. Nothing. In the next instant, Potter stumbled over his trunk, falling backwards into the road, and with a loud crack, the night bus appeared. Severus barely had the wherewithal to throw a propelling charm at the boy, which sent him rolling towards the pavement and out of harm's way. Except that wasn't how it was meant to happen. Allowing confusion to get the better of him was his third mistake. He wasted precious moments wondering whether Stan Shunpike had simply lied before recalling the corroborating statement of the bus driver, then wondering desperately if Black could have seen him somehow. But that was impossible, given the precautions he'd taken. The only way Black could have known Severus was there was if he'd smelled him, and that was absurd. By the time Severus apparated into the alleyway Potter had stared at, mere eye blinks after the departing night bus shook him from his reverie, there was nothing there. He searched high and low, combed the whole area, but he found not a single sign of Black ever having been there. The longer he searched, the hotter his blood boiled, until every last muscle in his body seemed to tremble, tight as a whipcord. No. This was simply unacceptable. He wouldn't allow Black to hoodwink him in this manner. He could fix this. He would fix it. All he needed to do was inform Snape of the mistakes he had made, so he could get it right the next time round. Black wouldn't evade him twice. Snape could find him, and he would pay. He practically flew to Hogwarts, racing the distance between Hogsmeade and the castle faster than he could recall ever doing before. Through some twist of rotten luck, he got as far as the entrance hall, running into Dumbledore halfway to the steps to the dungeon. And there he made his fourth, and most crucial, mistake. When the headmaster quickly deduced that he was not, in fact, Snape, and then had the gall to tell him to calm down, Severus burst out with the whole sorry tale, including, of course, his most sensible plans to resolve it. "No," Dumbledore said, "I cannot allow you to do that." Severus's fingers clenched around his wand. It hadn't left his hand since his arrival in Surrey.
"You have got to be joking! Which part of Black got away escaped your comprehension? He is still out there whilst we are speaking."
"As he was this morning, and yesterday, and the day before. I admit that it's regrettable that you were unable to—"
"Regrettable?"
"To kill two birds with one stone, so to speak, but I believe you've rather lost sight of the bigger picture here."
"I have lost sight of it? Do please excuse me, Headmaster, but it appears to be you who has—"
"You saved Harry, did you not?"
"And I will save him again."
"I think not," Dumbledore said solemnly. "Or, I should say, I have little confidence in your capacity to choose Harry's life over Black's capture right at this moment. You are too blinded by hatred. Had my other self been aware of just how much it would affect your ability to retain a sense of perspective, I am doubtful that he would have given you this task at all."
Severus stared at him, nostrils flaring. Several choice words immediately sprang to mind, but they stuck in his throat like ashes or clay, held there by a bright flare of rage.
"Besides," Dumbledore said, "if Sirius Black managed to avoid detection to a point where even you cannot discern his methods, I may have underestimated him. Your attention will be split either way, and if you provoke an open fight and he bests you, not only will he then have a fresh opportunity to kill Harry, but he may end up in possession of the time-turner. I hardly need to tell you why that must be avoided at all costs. The whole affair is too risky by far."
"I will not," Severus ground out past clenched teeth, "stand here and be insulted. I will do this whether you sodding agree with me or not."
He pushed past Dumbledore, getting about two strides in before he hit an invisible wall.
"You shall not speak with Snape. I forbid it."
"Or what?"
Severus snapped, eyes flickering towards Dumbledore's wand, where it rested suspiciously lightly in his palm.
"You will hex me? I can assure you, I've had worse."
"Oh, but can you?" Dumbledore said mildly. "Truly?"
There wasn't a hint of a twinkle in his blue eyes. Severus stared into them, wavering. In the end, he dropped his wand. A second later, the time-turner flew from his pocket.
"I shall speak with Snape," Dumbledore said, catching it neatly, "and keep this safe for the time being. You, meanwhile, will do your best to track Harry. Report back to me. If he's in a reasonably public or safe space, don't bring him here just yet."
"Yes,"
Severus said. He barely swallowed the
master, turning instead on his heel.
Oh, and Severus?
Yes.
Dumbledore stepped around to face him once more.
I truly am sorry that this experience has upset you this much. Had I known,
a wizened old hand reached out, brushing Severus's hair gently down,
I would have spared you this pain.
Something inside Severus's guts flipped violently. He might have called it revulsion, but it was nothing so simple. He should have twisted away, but, like a fool, if just for a fraction, he leaned into the touch. Severus spent the remainder of his holidays shadowing Potter during his stay at the Leaky Cauldron, polyjuicing into a new disguise every few days to avoid being detected. The Ministry might consider Diagon Alley safe enough territory, but Dumbledore insisted on caution in the face of Black's unpredictability. Severus himself was hardly inclined to argue, especially knowing Potter as he did. Unsupervised, he'd surely sneak off to Nocturne Alley or worse places the instant he got the chance. Mysteriously enough, he did not. Not once in over 3 weeks did Potter venture beyond the bounds of Diagon Alley, as if whatever he'd glimpsed that night in Little Whinging had put the fear of Merlin into him, when Severus had been unsuccessful in achieving the same over the course of years. Relieved as he was by Potter's sudden change in behavior, it also made his job dreadfully dull, because the boy, he quickly discovered, had absolutely no class. He avoided all the shops which were of actual interest, the used bookstores bursting with rare volumes, the apothecaries stocked with obscure ingredients, and instead trawled pointless gem displays and entertainment and game stores. He hovered over a set of solid gold gobstones as if they might actually be useful. He stared at a moving model of the galaxy as if it wasn't well known that the stars shifted and changed over time. Worst of all, he spent hours each day staring into the front window of Quality Quidditch Supplies, regarding the new firebolt with such longing that Severus had unpleasant flashbacks to teenage girls cooing over their latest crush when they should have been focusing on not melting their cauldrons. To top it all off, he ate so much ice cream that Severus's teeth began to throb dully just from watching him. It was all rather sickening, really, and Severus breathed a sigh of relief when the Weasleys' arrival gave him leave to return to Hogwarts, just in time to lay the finishing touches on his lessons plans for the start of term. Thank Merlin he always completed the bulk of this work at the beginning of the holidays. If Potter's interference had forced him to endure the arrival of hordes of unruly students, not to mention Lupin, in a sleep-deprived state, he might have strangled someone by accident. Even with a full night's sleep behind him, he ended up sorely tempted. Rumors amongst staff spread nearly as fast as inside the student body, and, although Severus had deliberately seated himself as far away from Lupin as possible, he couldn't escape tales of Gryffindor heroism during the welcoming feast.
"Dementor is on the Hogwarts Express," said Minerva, frowning and shaking her head at Madame Pomfrey. "What have we come to? If Professor Lupin hadn't intervened—"
"I quite agree. I dread to think of what might happen to any student who was caught unawares during the year. I've already topped up my emergency supply of chocolate, but there is only so much I can do. I have no treatment for the kiss."
"Well," Minerva said, "at the very least, we can rest assured that we finally have a defense teacher who is more than capable of protecting the children."
"There is that," Pomfrey said. "He saved the boy's life, I'm sure of it. Probably not what he expected before his first day as a teacher."
"Oh, Remus was always willing to go above and beyond," Minerva said. "I shall have to thank him in person later. Between Dementors and Black on the loose, I cannot imagine a better person to keep an eye on Mr. Potter so we can all ensure he stays safe."
Severus speared a carrot so hard his fork screeched on meeting the plate.
"How dare Lupin! Saving Potter was his job, and he'd be damned. Damned if he let some flea-infested monster steal it away from under his nose. If anyone knew how to keep Potter safe, surely it was Severus. He had the experience and the practice. Most important, he understood Potter's penchant for rule-breaking. Besides, Severus didn't trust Lupin. Save Potter once, to be given enough leeway to then throw him at Black's feet at the first opportunity? A neat plan, but Severus was not so easily hoodwinked as others. No matter how pleasant Lupin acted, he wouldn't pull the wool over Severus's eyes. Severus would treat him just as pleasantly, simply to avoid Dumbledore's ire. But he would watch. He would wait. Inevitably, Lupin would fall. The features Severus loved most about his quarters at Hogwarts was the panoramic window taking up an entire wall of his living room. Strictly speaking, it wasn't a window as such, but a complex spell established long ago. Rumor had it Slytherin himself had designed it. It afforded the occupant an underground view of the Black Lake, limited somewhat by the lack of light breaking its surface, but enhanced enough by charm work to see more than a few inches deep. Blessedly, the window only went one way. Severus would probably have attempted to unravel even ancient spellcasting had this not been the case, so one's privacy remained unimpeachable. If nothing else, watching the algae wave softly in the current was a soothing pastime, and Severus had taken to casting a look out the window for a minute or so whenever he was feeling particularly stressed. He was always most stressed on the first day of the term. No longer accustomed to the sheer idiocy of first and fifth years alike, it always crashed over him like a wave. When he dropped into his quarters for a brief breather between classes and saw the giant squid floating past his window, he was initially delighted. The creature rarely surfaced beyond the depths of the lake, and it had a certain elegance about it which appealed to the eye. Except that this time it elegantly cradled something distinctly odd in its arms, as though embracing a lover, something that upon closer inspection looked suspiciously like... Severus was going to kill Potter, but first he had to find out how he had died and resurrect him. The culprit turned out to be Hagrid once again. 3 hours, one convoluted rescue attempt, and much hysteria later, Severus managed to extract the following sequence of events. Hagrid had used hippogriffs for his first lesson, a bad idea. Potter had been the first student to approach one of the creatures, a terrible idea. And then Hagrid had compounded an error by encouraging the boy to mount the damn thing and letting it fly away with him. An idea so atrocious that Severus wanted to bury his face in his hands and weep. The hippogriff had taken Potter on a merry ride across Hogwarts grounds, and naturally Potter had had the good sense to lose his hold right above the Black Lake, falling from such a height that he was most likely dead upon hitting the water. The giant squid seemed most disappointed to lose its newfound companion. Even long after the merpeople had managed to wrench Potter's body from its jealous arms, it kept rising to the surface, flailing its tentacles in the air as if searching for something. Severus spent the rest of the night and most of the following day adapting a calming draught to work on hippogriffs. Then he laced a particularly juicy steak with the result, which hopefully would be enough to at least stop the thing from being quite so spirited, went back in time and bowed as though he was facing the Dark Lord himself. Funny how he'd never really expected that skill to come in useful again one day. Join the Death Eaters, be loved by all creatures great and small. No, that slogan didn't have the right ring to it. He still got his robes torn to shreds, mind. But that was the price one paid for placing a sticking charm on a hippogriff's back. September and October slid by in a haze of irritation. Even the fact that Weasley's new wand had the effect of decelerating the frequency of Potter's deaths did little to improve Severus's mood. After all, he was still surrounded by cretins everywhere. First, there was Draco and his spectacular feat of getting slashed by a sedated creature, as if he was overly keen to follow in Potter's footsteps. Then there were the resultant hours spent entertaining Lucius and his preposterous fixation with seeing the hippogriff slaughtered, hours of his life which Severus would never get back. Not that he especially cared for buckwheat, or whatever the thing was called,
but he'd long since lost his taste for Lucius's company. Years ago, when he had been young and oh so very foolish, he'd hung on the man's every word, drawn in by his charismatic aura and elegant, clipped vowels, overly eager to rid himself of the sour taste of Cokeworth which soaked through every word Severus spoke. Lucius had been the sweetest kind of poison, everything Severus was not. Not common, not bloody northern for a start, and certainly not tainted by Muggle blood. With age and experience, however, the shine had worn off. These days, Severus saw Lucius for precisely what he was, an arrogant, pompous twit who'd never had to so much as lift a finger to advance in life, whilst Severus had kicked and clawed and sometimes crawled his way to some sort of status. Lucius's charm was like overly sickly jasmine which bloomed at night, and once Severus had managed to untangle himself from its vines, he preferred to stay well away whenever possible. But as head of Slytherin House, he had to play nice. Not that he would ever have contemplated doing otherwise. If nothing else, Lucius possessed enormous reserves of power, and power was always to be courted. So Severus smiled and nodded and agreed that hippogriffs were vile creatures best destroyed. He broke out the reserva he'd saved for a special occasion and did not tell Lucius that Draco had inherited all of his arrogance but none of his wit or subtlety. He danced the dance, and as always, he danced it well. Sometimes Severus hated being a Slytherin. And then there was Lupin. Lupin, who was growing increasingly popular with the student body, no doubt in large part due to his attempts to ridicule Severus without even a hint of remorse or consideration for the consequences. The Boggart incident and subsequent lack of discipline led to 5 more cauldrons melted in 1 week alone, and that wasn't counting the one that Longbottom exploded, right in Potter's face, naturally, which forced Severus into another merry-go-round with the time-turner. Lupin. Lupin, who smiled affably and thanked him profusely on the first 2 occasions that Severus brought him the wolfsbane, seemingly content with the fact that Severus insisted on watching him drain the goblet until it was dry. 2 days later, Dumbledore turned up on Severus's doorstep with a frown, insisting that handing over the potion was quite sufficient and ordering him not to harass the poor fellow any further. Lupin, who was a tattletale, no matter how much Dumbledore denied it, claiming that the matter of Severus watching him like a hawk had come up quite casually in conversation. Lupin, who presented an unacceptable risk to all the students, and Potter most of all. Lupin, who could do no wrong. Lupin, who let Black into the castle. And even then, Dumbledore wouldn't hear a word against him. Even then, Severus was silenced, choked, condemned to watch hundreds of students snoring away on the floor of the Great Hall, responsibility weighing on him like a stone. "Look at them," Lupin said, coming to a halt next to Severus beside the main doors. "They were so agitated just a few hours ago, and now they're out like a light. Makes you want to be 13 again, doesn't it?" Severus said, thinking, "Not bloody likely." Above them, white pinpricks of light glimmered against the night sky. "Strange, is it not?" Severus said, eyes flickering over to Lupin. "How Black managed to find his way into the castle with the Dementors patrolling the perimeter?" There was no response. "Stranger still, that there was no trace to be found of him afterward," Severus continued. "Not so much as a hair left behind. Almost as though he had never been here. How do you suppose he managed that when he's not in possession of a wand?"
"I wouldn't hazard a guess," Lupin said, and although he held Severus's gaze, there was something off about it. "Really, Severus, I know exactly as much as you do."
"Liar. But you knew him so well," Severus narrowed his eyes. "Surely someone who used to be on such, intimate terms with a person is bound to possess some insight into them that others may lack."
Lupin's mouth tightened, his lips curving downward. "That was a long time ago, and I don't much care for you referring to it now, so I must ask you not to do it again." Severus smiled.
"I will go do another sweep, provided that you can spare me." "But of course," Severus said. "Rest assured,
All the children will be safe, so long as I'm here.
If guilt had a scent, Lupin would have reeked of it as he walked off, Severus was sure.
He felt them before they arrived. That he did not respond with more alacrity was no doubt a failing, if easily justified. He had not felt truly warm since the beginning of term. Even in the depths of the dungeons, a pervasive chill followed his steps, as though it had sunk into his very bones the moment the Dementors arrived. No one else seemed similarly affected, and Severus hardly felt inclined to share that he sensed them so much more keenly, that distance did not afford him the same degree of protection which others enjoyed. It was fitting, after all, that his regrets were woven so deeply into his being that no matter how tightly he locked them away, they sang away just under the surface of his skin. So it made perfect sense for him to feel that little bit colder out here on the stands of the Quidditch pitch, amidst the howling wind and the pounding rain. It made sense that his thoughts felt strangely loose, scattering away on tangents and evading his reach. When the temperature seemed to drop just another notch, he put it down to his sensitivity rather than any appreciable threat. By the time the cloaked figures glided onto the field, it was already too late. He could no more have conjured a Patronus than he could have recalled his own name. His last conscious thought was that his fingers looked strangely like claws as they clutched at the edge of the box. Then it hit him, like a wall of deafening sound, like a smothering blanket of silence, in flickering snatches too fast to make out, spreading before him like eternity. The smell of coal tar, a crack and a whimper, peeling wallpaper unfurling like thorns in his hand, the stain on a dress which will not rub out, and he scrubs, and he scrubs, and he— Stop that, Severus! Not in my house, you don't! Never learn nothing from— Red, 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 dripping off his own— I don't know you! You're not my son! A ballpoint pen and a muggle doctor, sign on the dotted— House is yours now! Crucio! 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 Green, 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 crimson eyes. Dumbledore's lips shaping a sentence, a word, soundlessly. She is— He came to with a sickening lurch, disoriented and shaking as chaos exploded around him. Down on the field, Minerva was lowering her wand. Beside her, Flitwick still held his aloft, silvery streams trailing from its tip. Brooms, haphazardly dropped, sank into the mud around a crowd that was congregating in a circle.
"Somebody call Madame Pomfrey!" Severus stumbled his way out of the stands faster than his liquid legs should have allowed, elbowing students and staff out of the way to get inside the circle where Potter lay motionless, Hooch at his side. She was just raising her wand when he arrived. He shoved it aside.
"Let me," he said, finding his voice thready and weak. "Advanced diagnostics."
For once, she wordlessly complied. There was something to be said for the medical training that came part and parcel with gaining mastery in potions. His wand hand, mercifully, obeyed despite the ice still crawling through his veins, but it hardly made much of a difference. The internal bleeding alone was far too severe to be dealt with anywhere outside of St. Mungo's, and they would never be able to get Potter there in time. He should have stood up and walked away. But for reasons he couldn't fathom, when he shook his head and Granger sobbed, "No!" fighting her way out of Wood's grasp, when Potter's eyelids began to flicker, he looked at Hooch and said, "They don't need to see this. Take them away." He was only distantly aware of Hooch and Minerva herding the students away, because right before him, Potter's eyes began to open. When he coughed, red stained his lips. His head jerked once, sharply, and Severus slid a hand underneath it to cushion any further abrupt movements, not knowing why, knowing only that he had to. "Shh," he said. Potter blinked, very slowly. "Snape?" Another cough, then a full-body shudder. "Hurts." A moment's thought felt too long, the time required to cast the strongest numbing spell he knew even longer. It would slow down Potter's heart, but, really, that was only a blessing. A kindness. Happened, Potter slurred. Already his eyes were beginning to droop.
You took a bit of a fall, but it's all right. You'll be fine.
Still hurts.
I know, Severus said, smudging a line of dirt away from Potter's temple, but not for very much longer. It'll be over soon, I promise.
Be dreamin', Potter mumbled, each word coming more sluggishly. Never nice to me. Severus had to lean in close to hear him at all now, but at least Potter could no longer see him. His eyes had fallen completely closed. The wind carried away most of his whispers, so Severus only caught snatches.
Dreaming earlier, too,
and don't understand. He brushed a hand over the boy's rain-slicked hair.
What don't you understand?
He asked, not really expecting an answer. It came, nevertheless, in coppery-scented breaths close to Severus's cheek.
Woman in my dream. Why she was screaming.
And Severus's blood ran cold, although the Dementors had been driven away. Through thick curtains of rain, he watched the boy's breath grow shallow and faint, watched as Potter fell still in his arms. He did not let go for a long time. Not until Minerva's fingers gently pried his own loose from where they had dug into Potter's icy, unmoving arm. Severus refused the chocolate that Pomfrey offered him. 10 minutes later, and many hours earlier, he was striding through the dark corridors of the castle, his hair still plastered to his face in wet disarray, his soaked robes dripping mud on the flagstones. Filch would no doubt have a conniption, but Severus did not care. This was all Minerva's fault. Out there on the pitch, he'd been cold, so cold, but placid in shock, almost as though he were floating, apart from his body, utterly cut off from any emotion. Then she'd had the unmitigated gall to embrace him, and something inside him had snapped. For the first time since he'd begun saving Potter, there had been no consideration for matters like changing his robes or taking time to regroup, only an urge to fix this, and fix it now. The more he thought on Potter's last words and his own helpless incompetence in the face of the Dementors, the more agitated he seemed to get. By the time he reached the stone gargoyle, he was half running. He ignored the brass knocker, pounding on Dumbledore's door with both hands, again and again and again, until,
"Severus?" Dumbledore said, and opened the door wider.
He was wearing fluffy red slippers and a matching bathrobe.
"What happened, my... you are he."
"Obviously," Severus said, already shouldering his way past him. He stormed towards the desk, stopped, turned and stalked back to Dumbledore.
"You must... must cancel your engagement tonight."
"Indeed."
"Yes, the match. You have to be. It has to be you. I cannot.
He broke off, breathing heavily.
"Slow down," Dumbledore said, grasping his arm. "You sound very upset. Why can you not intervene?"
"Because," Severus shouted, wrenching away with a hysterical laugh, "it appears I'm allergic to Dementors."
And just like that, it all came rushing back. He managed to turn, barely, but lost his balance, his hand scrabbling uselessly at the edge of the desk as his legs folded under him like so much paper. He crashed to the floor in a thoroughly undignified heap, shivering, shaking, and the humiliation alone was too much to bear. That Albus should see him like this, again, and over something so inconsequential. Pathetic, that's what it was. That's what he was. He pulled his legs to his chest and buried his face against his knees, trying to breathe. His throat was full of lead. Eons slid by before something soft, something warm, settled over his shoulders. A blanket. A moment later, Dumbledore pried his fingers loose from his robes and folded them around hard ceramic.
"You're in shock," he said. "Drink this. It will help."
Severus lifted his head just enough to take a small sip. It turned out not to be the tea he was expecting, but bitter, rich chocolate. He let it trickle down his throat and swallowed, and kept his eyes closed.
"There is no shame in this, my boy," Dumbledore said gently.
Severus laughed, feeling the sound like a knife. When he blinked, he noticed that his face was wet. He turned his head and brushed the dampness away with his knuckles, but it was already too late.
"You knew,"
he rasped into the silence. It sounded remarkably like an accusation.
"My trial, you... They never took me to Azkaban while I was waiting. Overflow issues, they said, but it was you."
"Perhaps." Severus forced himself to look up, staring into Dumbledore's solemn eyes, and dared not ask how.
"Call it gut instinct," Dumbledore said. "You have been through much. It stands to reason that the Dementors should affect you more than others."
"It's unacceptable. I cannot allow myself to fall apart. I must be able to..."
"Defend yourself? Yes, that is indeed a consideration. But not all in one day."
He reached out, stroking a hand through Severus's tangled hair, smoothing it back into place.
"The first time is always the worst. Don't be so hard on yourself."
Severus closed his eyes, shivering as he leaned into the touch.
"I will attend the match, of course," Dumbledore continued softly, "and perhaps just this once we can relax the rules slightly. As a matter of fact, I will go and tell Snape myself that he should stay away. One set of memories seems quite sufficient in this instance, wouldn't you say?"
Severus nodded, as if he could disagree.
"Good, good," Dumbledore said, and rose to his feet. "I shall do so right now and fetch you clean robes whilst I'm at it. You wait here, and do drink up. It really will help."
Burrowing deeper into the blanket, Severus lifted the cup to his lips and listened to the muffled sounds of slippers against granite as Dumbledore strode away. It preyed on his mind more than it ought to have done. In the safety of his quarters, he remembered a perfect summer day, the smell of freshly mown grass and bare feet tickling his side. He watched the doe canter before the fire, thought of Potter hearing Lily's screams as she died, and the ethereal creature bowed her head before dispersing into chill air. He was a sentimental old fool. That Potter recalled the last moments of her life should not have mattered. It altered none of the facts. And yet, Severus caught himself staring at the boy during odd moments in class and at mealtimes, haunted by his confused voice, by the echo of shallow, wet breaths trailing away into silence. He could never seem to muster the usual anger in those moments, only a strange sort of ache which bloomed beneath his sternum, and that alone was disquieting. He should never have stuck around to watch Potter die. There was a reason he chose to remain on the sidelines and watch from a distance. Getting involved only ever upset his equilibrium. If he wasn't careful, he'd soon be hopelessly entangled, and where would he be then? No, better to let everyone else wind themselves in webs of nonsensical social interactions. Severus functioned best one step removed. He banished stray thoughts of Potter as soon as they appeared, and if they kept cropping up repeatedly, well, he'd just have to banish them harder and better next time. His objective was simple, and he would not be deterred. Practical matters, of course, formed an exception. When Minerva confiscated the suspicious broom Potter received for Christmas, thank Merlin that at least Granger appeared to still possess a modicum of sense, Severus insisted on being involved in examining it. Whilst both she and Flitwick were competent enough, as he grudgingly had to admit, he simply could not have rest easy otherwise. Even the most accomplished of wizards could make mistakes. Minerva, to her credit, welcomed his input readily, but by late January they nevertheless butted heads.
"Whilst your concern for Mr. Potter's welfare is touching, it is hardly concern. And what more do you expect? Another week, at the least. We've had over 4, Minerva said, and nobody has found anything wrong with the broom. My point exactly. Whatever spell Black has put on it, if it came from him at all, which I fairly doubt at this point, is clearly too subtle to be revealed with such a cursory examination."
"Severus," Minerva said, leaning toward him over her desk, "the stringent checks that broom has been through can hardly be called cursory by any stretch of the imagination. I stripped it down to every last twig myself, as did Flitwick and Lupin."
"Oh yes, Lupin. How thoroughly encouraging.
And because I knew that you would say that, I ensured he did it prior to you. Do you really mistrust your own abilities that much?"
"Don't be absurd. My appreciation of my own faculties is simply tempered by reason."
Obsession, more like, Minerva said, sitting back in her chair. She stirred her tea for a moment, gazing into the cup. I wish I knew where it came from. Or, and here she looked up to fix Severus with surprisingly steely eyes, that you could use it to find some empathy and compassion for the boy instead. Severus resisted the urge to fling his own cup at the wall. I hardly believe that is necessary, he said, forcing a smile to his lips. You cosseted him enough as it is. Minerva sighed, setting her spoon down on the saucer. Regardless, Potter will get his broom back tomorrow. I've discussed it with the headmaster, and the decision is final.
How conveniently timed it is, too, with the next Gryffindor matchup on Saturday. One might draw the conclusion that you care more.
Do not finish that sentence, Severus Snape, Minerva said tersely, with an accompanying glare. One might equally point out how convenient it would be for you to retain Potter's broom for another week, thus depriving Slytherin of competition. Severus laughed.
As if I have any need of such insultingly obvious tactics. With the way the scores currently stand, Gryffindor will be out of the running for the 8th year in a row if you lose another match. So by all means, he got to his feet and headed toward the door. Let Potter fall off his broom once again. By now, he's almost got it down to an art form, wouldn't you say?
And he left the room without giving Minerva a chance to reply.
Despite Draco's childish, transparent attempts to achieve otherwise, Potter miraculously managed to stay on his broom. But Severus did not have long to reflect on whether this was a blessing, because it saved him another trip back in time, or a curse, allowing Minerva to gloat and reprehend his control of the Slytherins in one fell swoop. Because that night, Black once again invaded Gryffindor Tower. Severus would not let him get away a third time. His fingers clenched around the time-turner all the way through the staff meeting, and when it let out, he was on his feet faster than lightning. Somehow, Dumbledore still managed to catch him at the door. No, he said simply, although the gaze that captured Severus was far from straightforward. Minerva shot them a curious look as she walked past them, and the door closed behind her with a note of finality. "Must we go over this yet again?" Dumbledore continued. "I so do dislike having to confiscate the time-turner from you."
"Then don't do it!"
The first time, it had been Severus's fault, if unexpected and not entirely predictable. The second time, he had reasoned that as soon as Dumbledore returned the object to him, he would go back despite orders and catch Black as he approached the fat lady. He had tried, and discovered that Dumbledore had imbued the device with a spell which blocked the hourglass being turned the necessary number of revolutions, limiting him to a mere 24-hour window. By the time it had faded, the natural limits of the time-turner had been well surpassed.
"This is nonsensical," he said, feeling it dig an imprint into the palm of his hand. "If you're concerned about students being caught in the crossfire, I need not even enter the dormitory. I shall wait in the common room, which utterly nullifies any risk."
"There is always a risk, but I am not inclined to argue this with you. You know my reasons. They have not changed. Now, please, hand it over."
Severus could feel his pulse in his throat, hammering wildly.
"What more?" he burst out impulsively. "Do I have to do to get you to trust me?"
He wanted to take the words back as soon as they'd left his lips, because Dumbledore's expression instantly shifted to something Severus did not like, something which looked altogether too much like pity. For a long moment, they held each other's eyes. Then, softly,
"Are you giving me much reason to trust you at this moment? How can I, when you question my judgment at every turn? Trust, my boy, has to go both ways."
There was something resoundingly wrong with that statement, but, under Dumbledore's gaze, Severus could not seem to figure out what, or why. He stared at the door, chastised as though he was all of 5 years old.
"And have I not extended you my trust time and again? Does acknowledging that you lose sight of reason where Sirius Black is concerned render void and invalid the tasks with which I have entrusted you? I could ask you to swear on her grave, of course, because I believe you would honor that, whatever the circumstances. But that would be cruel. As I said, it gives me no pleasure to have to confiscate the time-turner from you. But if you refuse to trust me, is it not kinder, then, to simply remove the temptation?" Severus drew his hand from his robes and stared at the tight clench of his fist, torn, undecided.
"You don't need to," he said eventually, consciously relaxing his fingers as he met Dumbledore's blue eyes. "I swear that I won't use it. I swear." He swallowed heavily, feeling absurdly like a traitor. "On her." Dumbledore pressed a finger over his lips, cutting him off.
"Shh," he said. "I believe you."
For long seconds, Severus felt him deep, deep in his mind. Then the contact broke off. Dumbledore glanced down as he folded Severus's fingers over the time-turner.
"I am glad we were able to resolve this," he said. "Now, we really have to be getting on with searching the castle."
Severus nodded, fruitless though he knew the endeavor to be.
"Odd, is it not?" Dumbledore said whilst opening the door, "that Black should have been so ineffectual in his attempt on Harry's life that all he achieved was slashing Mr. Weasley's bed curtains."
"Probably confused them in the dark," Severus said, clenching his jaw. "Too hasty, too eager."
Dumbledore said. "Perhaps."
The single advantage to Black still roaming the land was that Potter's movements continued to be monitored closely by every member of staff. Not only did it relieve Severus of some of the pressure of being the only one to track his whereabouts, but he fancied the close observation had reduced Potter's usual escapades and thus kept his death count to a tolerable level. Not that Potter stopped dying altogether. No, that would have been far too simple. Ferenz had been correct on one thing. Time was indeed persistent and clearly wanted Potter dead, even though it was hardly what Severus would have called subtle. But between November and February, all of Potter's deaths were accidents of such remarkable stupidity that they were easily fixed. He stumbled and fell between a gap of the moving staircases, so Severus waited at the bottom of it, arms crossed, and glared until Potter decided he'd rather take the long way round. Trelawney purchased new incense, which sent Potter into anaphylactic shock during a divination class, so Severus ransacked her rooms in the dead of night. When she failed to take the hint and repurchased the incense, he repeated the process, which sufficiently terrified her into compliance.
"A sign," he overheard her telling Sinistra, "a dark omen. Something terrible is about to occur."
Potter even managed to trip and impale himself, eye first, on a sharp shard of ice. That one turned out to be surprisingly fun, since resolving it clearly meant that Potter needed a light shove of magic to send him sprawling into a flurry of snow instead. One had to take one's amusements where one could find them in such trying times. Severus's biggest worry, however, remained Black. After all, what if Black chose not to kill Potter on the spot, but abduct him first? The prospect threw up potential problems a mile wide, and Severus did not relish trying to explain to Minerva why he needed to trail a 13-year-old student as far as the toilet. Somehow he suspected that would not wash. So when Draco reported the apparition of Potter's head in Hogsmeade mere hours after Severus had sent the blasted boy off to Gryffindor Tower, he was nothing short of incensed. And when Potter, confronted, had the nerve to give him lip and lie to his face, he recovered every last shred of the anger which had been missing since the incident with the Dementors, easily. More fool he. Potter might hear Lily dying and have her eyes, but he was nothing, nothing like her. Lily had been sensible and forthright, but Potter was James all over again, doused in arrogance and self-importance. That the boy clearly worshipped his father only made it that much sweeter to let slip a few details as to the truth of the man, and Potter's heated denial of them proved testament to how much they stung.
Good.
Lupin, alas, was not so easily riled. If Severus had not despised him quite as much as he did, he might have been impressed with how smoothly he lied. As it was, his victory over Potter turned sour in his mouth as he watched Lupin take away the not-so-spare bit of parchment that the boy carried. Still, Severus got the last word. That night, whilst doing his usual rounds of the castle, he took a brief detour to knock on Lupin's door. "Severus," came the bleary-eyed greeting. To judge by the threadbare pajamas, Lupin had already been in bed. "Can I help you?"
"Oh, no," Severus said with a smile. "I merely wanted to drop in to comment you on your spectacular performance this afternoon. Almost worthy of a Slytherin, one might say. Almost."
Lupin frowned. "I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about."
"But of course not," Severus said.
"Well," Lupin said, "thanks for that, then. Now, if you don't mind, it's late. I really do need to sleep." Severus caught the door with his boot before it could close.
"A word of advice," he said, as though he hadn't heard Lupin at all. "You may have Potter eating out of your hand, but not everyone is as gullible. I may not be present during your private sessions with him on Thursday nights, but I can assure you I am watching you."
"For what it's worth," Lupin said, rubbing his knuckles across his brow, "I'm teaching him how to cast the Patronus charm. Not that it concerns you."
"Of course you are."
Severus ran a finger down the door jamb, slowly.
"So long as we're clear on one matter, I'm very aware of your true motives."
"I sincerely doubt that."
"And I sincerely doubt that someone as gifted at potions as myself could ever make a mistake, even with as complex a brew as Wolfsbane. But,"
Severus's shrug was deliberately exaggerated,
"if I discover that somebody so much as laid a finger on the boy, my own might just slip."
He stepped away from the door, straightening.
"Sleep well, Lupin."
He was running through an underground tunnel. The walls seemed to cave in on him, rough earth looming above and around him, pressing dank darkness into his sides. They morphed with the labyrinthine twists and turns of this maze, reverberated with the thunder of his own heartbeat like a drum, pounding, pounding, pounding. His sweat-slick palms caught on lichen and moss as he raced through the black, always one step from being buried, unseeing, yet never colliding with a wall. What he was running from, he couldn't have said. He was fleeing, yes, or perhaps trying to find it. It was hard on his heels, slithered behind him. It was waiting for him beyond the next corner. He had to get out, track it down. He had to. He had to. He did not recall stumbling, but then he fell, nevertheless, a sickening, helpless tumble down the mouth of an abyss. His fingers sought purchase, but there was nothing. Nothing but the endless air that bit at him on his way down, slicing his arms to shreds. He seemed to be falling forever, was surely plummeting to his death, and when he hit the ground he would— He landed on softness, not making a sound. His limbs trembled with fear, but not pain. A rank stench assaulted his nostrils. He rolled away, fingers sinking into mud, and opened his eyes, and although there was no light, he could suddenly see in sharp, distorted flashes. Pale skin and long streaks of blood-red hair spilling over shaggy, dark fur. The monster lifted its head and snarled, fangs dripping wet, and Severus recoiled in horror but could not look away, could only stare at the white gleam of ribs, could only listen to the crunching of bone as it bent down to resume its meal. In the next instance, Lily's dead eyes snapped wide open.
"There was a woman," she said mockingly. "She was screaming." And on the last word, her features began to flicker, morphing and shifting, until only the eyes remained the same.
"You're too late," Lack whispered into his ear. "Always, forever, too late."
"No," Severus gasped. "No, I can fix this."
"Really?" Lack said from where he was kneeling beside Potter's corpse, casually stroking a hand through raven-black hair, watching the werewolf continue to feed.
"You had better be quick, then, because time's running out." Tick, tick, tick.
And Severus watched in terror as he lifted the time-turner. He lurched forward, but it crumbled to dust under the press of Black's fingers, and he opened his mouth, and—
came to in a tangle of sheets on the floor next to his four-poster, sweat-soaked and heaving. He failed to make it to the bathroom in time. As always, spring seemed to set time to racing. Or perhaps it was the nightmare-induced sleep deprivation. All Severus knew was that one day bled into the next, too full of tasks. He taught and watched Lupin and Potter. He prepared exams and saved the boy from the most commonplace deaths, a poisonous plant in the greenhouses, a cheering charm gone wrong which had him laughing himself into cardiac arrest. He marked essays and gave detentions and, encouraged by the first rays of sunshine, approached the task of growing inured to the Dementors. Each week he ventured more closely to where they floated and practiced the Patronus charm. Each week he returned, shattered and weary to the bone. Sometimes he even remembered to eat. Always, always he remembered the wolfsbane, and if he occasionally had to resort to stimulating draughts to stay awake to ensure it was perfectly brewed, well, that was a small price to pay. He could rest later. He could rest once the specter of black had been forced to relinquish its hold on his dreams, once he was safely locked away, or, better yet, kissed. But black seemed to have vanished as though he'd never been there, and as the end of term grew increasingly near, Severus grew more and more frantic. So when he barged into Lupin's office on the last day of exams, potion in hand, and found no one there, found nothing but the map, when he watched that small black dot labeled Lupin progress through the ha, through the underground passage, he was ready. He was so very ready, and this time not even Dumbledore could stand in his way.
Well, there you have it, Severus. Unless you are suggesting that Harry and Hermione are able to be in two places at once, I'm afraid I don't see any point in troubling them further.
The true meaning of Dumbledore's words did not sink through the incandescent fire of his rage until Severus had already fled from the hospital wing. He was leaning against the wall, breathing, breathing, trying to get the black spots to cease dancing across his vision when the pieces of the puzzle slowly clicked into place. The harassed air that Granger had carried throughout her year, the dark circles under her eyes which Severus knew intimately from looking in the mirror, the snippets of conversation in the staff room he'd not fully registered at the time, but which now burst into color. Did Muggle studies not run parallel with arithmancy? That bastard. Hands shaking, Severus rifled through his robes for the time-turner. Screw trust. This was simply too much. And came up empty. It was all he could do not to fling himself bodily at the headmaster when he and Fudge came walking down the corridor seconds later. He did grab Dumbledore's arm rather more firmly than not. His voice, when he spoke, came out in a snarl.
A word! Now!
Fudge's eyebrows lifted. Dumbledore took one glance at Severus, said,
"Excuse us,"
and promptly led him into the nearest classroom. Severus did not wait for him to finish laying down privacy spells.
I know what you have done.
Dumbledore said. Yes, I had thought that you might.
You won't even bother denying it, then.
Dumbledore frowned.
And insult your intellect whilst you are already in such a—
You're damn right I'm in a state, Severus exploded. How could you? Never mind, I don't care. Just give it back to me. Now.
This, Dumbledore said, lifting the time-turner from his pocket. By all means, do have it, but I fear it may not be as much use to you.
Then I'll bloody well die trying to break through your preposterous spell.
Severus ripped the chain out of Dumbledore's hand, only to stop short, confusion breaking through his anger. The hourglass, usually pristine even after the headmaster had done its worst, was encased in a strange bluish glow. When he attempted to touch it, his fingers slid off it as if it was buttered glass. He stared at the thing, utterly confounded.
It will not work, said Dumbledore, not because of anything I did to it, but because it senses the paradox.
Paradox, Severus said.
His insides felt hollowed out, as though they had been scraped raw.
You had not got quite that far, then, in your deduction. Yes, a paradox, and a most complex one at that, one which this device could never sustain. The Dementors hardly left of their own accord. Something drove them off. Someone, I should say.
The very thought forced bile up Severus's throat.
Potter!
Saved your life tonight, yes, as well as his own, and—
It should have been me. It would have been too, had you not— How dare you!
He took several steps closer, fingers clenching around metal. You speak to me of trust, and then you go and do this! Let Black walk free, when you know—
I know that he is innocent.
He's guilty as sin!
Every muscle in his body seemed to tremble, clenched tight and ready to snap.
I should walk out of this door, right this second, tell Fudge everything!
And prove it how? Dumbledore said, quite calmly, nodding toward Severus's hand. With this?
Yes, Severus hissed. Why the hell not? Has it ever occurred to you that I might be sick of this? Do you have any idea how many times?
He broke off, heaving a breath, then another. The room suddenly seemed to be spinning around him. Dumbledore steadied him for several long seconds. Then,
let Potter die, Severus rasped. I am done.
He got as far as the door. Dumbledore never stopped him, just watched him stumble towards it, placid, silent, unmoving. Whether he'd have intervened, Severus would never know, because the moment he turned the handle, the memory of green eyes flashed to his mind, sharply accusing, and he dropped his hand as if scalded. The most wretched part of it all was that he couldn't tell for certain whose eyes they were. He pressed his forehead into the rough wooden grain of the door.
I thought not, Dumbledore said very softly. You're understandably overwrought. Perhaps the best thing you can do now, he laid his palm on Severus's back, is to rest.
Severus wrenched away from the touch with a snarl and ripped the door open, shouldering his way past Fudge without a second glance back. He ran down the steps and to his quarters, slammed the door behind him, and flung the time-turner into the furthest corner. But it wasn't enough, could never, ever be enough. He swept every last paper off his desk and then hexed it for good measure. It groaned as it toppled over, but he was already moving again, toward the drinks cabinet. When it refused to open immediately, he smashed the glass with his fist and blindly grabbed the first bottle, not caring if he cut his hand. Then he sat in the wreckage of 5 classes worth of exam papers, tilted his head back, and he drank, and he drank, and he drank.